Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Tuesday morning, the 19th of June, and in most parts of the country now, the sun is rising, and in all parts of the country, that tomb is empty, for our Savior has risen, and that is good news indeed. Not only do we have freedom from the power of sin in terms of it having the final word in our lives, but there is always hope and always future that everything and all the troubling headlines of our days are all going to be restored one day in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus, and we get to taste of that kingdom now, and that is good news indeed. You are listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, your interim host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio, as you know, by Matt Reynolds running the sound and the board as Logan Roush has a couple of days off this week. And Paul Perot is producing the show with the help of Rachel Sutton as well, and bringing all these great guests and these voices from around the country that can help us sort out so many of these news headlines from both a political, but more importantly, a Christian view as well, and try to navigate this each day. We have Bruce Ashford, one of our favorites, coming up here in just a minute to talk through the immigration conversation. Bruce Ashford has posted a wonderful blog going through four of the key questions that'll help sort out some of the complexity of all of this. Now, Matt, I had noticed, and station manager Dick Whitworth sent me an article the other day that was noticing some of the changes and trends. One of the things that I love is just seeing how church and society work together. And we've gone away from denominational names in so many of our churches. So you were once part of a church that was?
Evangelical Free Church.
It was Evangelical Free, but you changed the name on that.
They dropped the denominational name out of it, but the other thing that was there was a little different there because it was the city context. It was had been in one city, moved cities, and then kept the original name for 30 years.
Yeah.
And then decided, well, you know what? Maybe we actually are part of this new community.
And it's fascinating to watch all the changes in names. We have names like Elevate Now and Vertical and Summit and New Point and Transformation and Epic and Renovation. I wonder what the history books are going to say 100 years from now about what was going on in our culture to change all these names of the church.
They are going to be wondering what we were doing. Like, why did we necessarily think that all these names have a bad connotation today without any other meaning?
Well, either the church has always been the people of faith following Jesus. It's more than a building. It's more than a sign. It's more than a steeple. And so as long as we keep walking it on that way, we probably won't lose our way. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be with Bruce Ashford to talk about the immigration situation. It's 8 minutes past the hour, and we are joined now by Bruce Ashford, regular contributor here to the show. Bruce is part of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary and also has his website, BruceAshford.net, where he regularly posts articles that are underneath the umbrella of Christianity for the Common Good. And it's really always thinking about our Christian faith in light of the headlines of the day. Really helpful stuff. Can't recommend more highly heading to his website when we can't figure out what's going on with these issues. So good morning, Bruce. It's great to have you with us.
Peter, thank you so much. Great to be back on the show.
Well, so one of the most important questions of the morning so far is with President Trump having created the new Space Force initiative, is we've had some mixed responses in the studio about whether you'd put on the jumpsuit and head into space. So Bruce, where are you at with this? Are you a Star Wars guy? Is this sort of, you got that Luke Skywalker with your eyes always to the horizon, as Yoda would have said? How does this land in on you?
Yeah, you know, the immigration is a very complicated issue, and I think one important thing for us to remember is that the Bible's teaching usually it does not give direct policy guidance for policy issues in a 21st century democratic republic. So we got to have a little bit of humility as we work together to take real biblical principles and then reason toward appropriate application in our time. You know, so out of this Well, just to set the context again, Attorney General Jeff Sessions quoted Romans 13, which tells us to obey the laws of the government. And he quoted that verse towards supporting the current administration's policies at the border that sometimes are separating children from their families. And in the article, I tried to separate out four questions. Let me just list what they are, and then you can tell me, you know, what we want to talk about. The first question is the use of Romans 13. What does that passage mean in context? What are some other things that Paul said about our relationship to the government? So that's Bible interpretation. The second one is an interpretation of the current administration's policies, you know, what's actually being said and what's not. The next question after that is, what would I do differently, if anything? And then a couple of other questions, actually. Should we support open borders? That's a huge question. And then finally, are there any, like, actions, specific actions that those of us in radio land can take today to make things better?
Yeah, I love those questions, Bruce. And they really, I think, let's start with the first one, because it comes up quite often, and I think it's quite confusing when we treat the Bible as if Paul or whoever was writing some of these letters that we use was trying to write things for everybody for all time, as opposed to understanding that there's principles underpinning what he's writing that are always relevant, but we need to sort through them. And that Romans 13 passage that Attorney General Sessions quoted kind of falls into that category in which he said we really just need to obey the law of the government. But if that's the case, then the laws of North Korea need to be obeyed. The laws of Nazi Germany needed to be obeyed. The Jim Crow laws, they needed to be obeyed. So clearly there's something going on that's different here. Just help us understand that Romans 13 passage.
Yeah. So, you know, if you just take Paul, we're not even going into the writings of Jesus or any of the other writers who ultimately are in agreement with Paul. But if we just take Paul's writings, he has two broad things that he tells us about our relationship to the government. The first thing that he says, and this is what he says the most often, is that Christ is Lord. Jesus is Lord and Caesar is not. In other words, the highest object of our allegiance is Christ the King, the cosmic King, not any earthly king. That's what Daniel understood, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego understood. That's what every Christian understands when they sit down to think about it, is that when God's law comes in conflict with man's law, we pick God's law and not man's, right? So then, you know, in the Philippians, he said that, as a matter of fact, one day every knee will bow to Jesus, including Caesar's knee. To the Colossians, he talked about how he would return one day to set the world to rights and reinstall himself as king. Okay, so that's one type of teaching, that Christ and his law take precedent over human law. But on the other hand, like in Romans 13, Paul is saying, but listen, guys, don't go too far with it. Don't take this principle too far and think that you can just go around, you know, disobeying the laws of your land. You actually need to be good citizens. So unless you have pressing, convictional reasons not to obey a law, obey the law. You know, buckle your seatbelt, drive the speed limit, pay your taxes, be a good citizen, and this is part of your witness. And then applying this to a 21st century democratic republic, it's even more complicated, because part of our Constitution is the implication that we as citizens will use our voices and our vote to make our nation's laws and policies better. So part of our submission to the government in the United States or to our political arrangement, part of that submission is to voice our disagreement when it's time to disagree. That makes sense?
It does, absolutely. There's that balance between recognizing that we're not here to create anarchy, but at the same time, there is a series of laws in the kingdom of Jesus that are going to be more important at times than the laws of the land.
Yeah, and you know, I think Romans 13 gets used for all sorts of things. It was used to defend slavery repeatedly by pastors during the era of slavery. It's been used well. It's been used badly. Ultimately, it's just been used selectively. So what we have to do is, instead of just quoting Romans 13 when it comes to a preferred policy of ours, we have to learn to give a biblical rationale, reason from biblical principles, for why this particular law should be submitted to, rather than for us to practice civil disobedience or to voice our criticism against it.
That's great. Thank you. So we'll take, Yeah, I was going to say, we'll head to break, and we'll see if we can kind of clear up the line a little bit, too. It's just a little bit fuzzy. But why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, Bruce, I would love for you to comment just around the separation policies. And is this really God's best intention for our society? And how do we think about those things? Great to have you here. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back with Bruce Ashford. It's 17 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined by Dr. Bruce Ashford, who writes about Christianity from the for the common good, BruceAshford.net. We're talking through his blog that he recently posted to kind of help us think through all of this immigration, not just from a policy standpoint, but actually from a Christian view. And Bruce, one of the questions you address is around the administration's separation policies of families. Is this really the kind of policy that would be consistent with what God's intentions would be for a group of people?
Yeah, and I'm going to be really careful answering this because I don't want it to hurt my chances getting hired for Space Force.
Understood. I know it's a big deal for you, so yes.
And I may ask you to take this episode down off of the air in case it hurts me in the future. No. So I think, you know, that this administration's policies, you know, we've got such a tribalized environment right now. You've got anti-Trump people who are absolutely against anything Trump says or does merely because he says it or does it. And then you've got pro-Trump people who seem to agree with every thought, every opinion he's ever had over the course of his life, even when those opinions contradict each other. And then you've got those kind of people talking to each other on Facebook and on our tabloid news networks. All of them are tabloid. And this just obfuscates. It makes things difficult. So I'm going to try to bring a little bit of clarity here to the public outrage. Here's what's happening. It used to be that most immigration was single Mexican males. Right now, that's shifted, and it's a lot of family units fleeing from violence in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. The Trump administration hasn't changed any laws. They're operating under the same laws that were enacted by the Clinton administration, the Obama administration, the W. Bush administration. There's one way in which they are applying those laws differently, and that is this, that there have been in the past several very limited reasons for which you could separate a child from their family, and one of those is if the family member is detained, right, legally. And the Trump administration has started enforcing that with all adults who are detained, including ones who have children, all right? So here's the options for the government. When they've got an adult who's tried to enter the country illegally or who wants to enter the country and they're trying to make a legal decision, they can either – there's a decree that says they can't keep the child for longer than 20 days. So they can either keep the adult in detention and release the child to somebody, family member, a licensed person of some sort, or – they could release the adult and the child together. The negative of releasing the adult and the child together is that you may never see the adult or the child again. It's possible. The negative of keeping the adult and releasing the child is that you're separating adult from children. And what I want to argue here is there has got to be a better way. That usually there is a third way, and there is a third way here. And I think we've got a moral crisis on our hands. And if we can't find a third way, shame on us. The third way, and I'm agreeing here with Senator James Lankford, with Senator Mark Meadows from North Carolina, with Paul Ryan, with all five first ladies, and a number of others, is that we've got to find a third way. And here's what I think the third way is. The Florence decree, I hope Congress overturns it, but until it does, after 20 days, there is a way of quote-unquote releasing the child, but not separating them from the parent. And that is that you build more shelters. And so the child is legally released, but still being retained in very close proximity to the parent so that there's not a possibility of that child being lost or smuggled or kidnapped or whatever may happen when they're just kind of released out there into the country. You know, what do you think about that, Peter?
Well, I really appreciate that you are bringing in this third way, because you see raging on one side that there needs to be the zero tolerance policy and the rule of law. And on the other side is sort of, but we're always been a country of immigrants, so we should let everybody through. And you're trying to suggest that we're holding a tension between justice and mercy at the same time. You actually quote in your blog a passage from Leviticus 19 that says, "You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself." And there's a moral imperative here that, yes, we can't just let the borders be open and everybody flowing through, but to err on the side of compassion and recognize the humanitarian nature of this is what you're trying to argue for, from what I hear.
It is. And, you know, foreign policy is pretty complicated, and most folks, you know, don't have the time to get into it, or they only listen to one news outlet.
Right.
Which means that the news outlets are very selective in what they report. They're telling partial truths all the time, you know, on purpose, because they're tribalized and politicized. I think the nations do have a right and usually the responsibility to secure their borders. I don't think that open borders is a great policy. I don't want to have a one world government with entirely fluid borders. I think it's best for the people within the borders of a nation to know who's coming to their country and who's not. And so I do think it's right to secure the border, but we can secure the border in a way that upholds both justice and mercy. Do we have a couple minutes left to talk about what those of us in radio land can do?
I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Bruce. Yes, because it's sort of all out there in the headlines, right? But then we move on with our day. And so how can we get this into just our regular life? What are your suggestions?
Yeah, you know, so most of us do have opinions and are you know, well-meaning, and we want to do something. But in the national political landscape, we feel pretty helpless. We're
right.
Not helpless. So
right.
There's a number of things we can do. One of the most important things that you can do, anyone on this show can do, is to go on your website and find the email address or the mailing address of your congressman and write a brief letter. It can be three sentences. This is how change happens in Congress. This is how Trump went into office, is that there was a wave of everyday citizens making their voice heard. Well, make your voice heard to your congressperson. You can do that through a letter. You can do it through email. You can do it through a tweet to that person's account. That's actually a legitimate way of communicating now. They pay attention to their Twitter accounts. Now, a more difficult one in one way is to allow yourself to engage in interpersonal conversation, like in a coffee shop face-to-face or on a Facebook page. And a Facebook page poses challenges. When we're talking about something in writing, people can assume something about our demeanor or our intentions a lot more easily, right? They don't see us. And so they can ascribe or assume bad intentions to us. And so it can get heated and ugly. And what we can do is just to make sure that we don't escalate, that as we interact, that we show a better way. And here's what I found on my Facebook author page. When I write, especially with Fox Opinion, Daily Caller, a Daily Signal, and I link to it on my author page, I'll get sometimes up to thousands of comments, usually more like 50 or 100 or something like that. But and then out of that, probably 50% of them are insults and mockery, right?
Of course.
People making fun of me.
Big shocker in the Twitter jungle that would be taking place, Bruce.
Yeah, and so it's just toxic. But here's what I've found, that if when I respond, and I make sure that I do take time to respond to some of those comments that kind of tell partial truths about me or insult me, if I start with a kind comment, thanking them for their concern on the issue, and then I disagree with them in a reasonable manner, and then I close by thanking them for commenting, if I do it that way instead of just slapping at them, about 50% of the time I get a rational and humane response, and we have a conversation. That's what Christians in our nation have to start doing. And by the way, if I can just promote the book for a moment.
Please.
This is what I'm trying to show us how to do in my most recent book, published about 2 weeks ago, entitled Letters to an American Christian. You need to buy one and buy about five copies for your friends.
Love it.
College students, and so that we can carve out a more excellent way, as Paul encouraged us to do.
Well, and I would love to, if we'll have you on the show next week again, Bruce, and I would love to specifically get into this Letters to an American Christian book, because it's going to be arguing for how we do live in society, that we're part of these earthly kingdoms here all around us, but there's really a heavenly kingdom call that orients us in all of these conversations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I really do appreciate you having me on the show today. You're a great radio host, and I tune in fairly often, and I'm glad that you let me be a guest.
Well, you know, Bruce, you say stuff like that, you'll be on every day as far as I'm concerned. You butter up the host like that, and that's it. So I will send you some links about how you can sign up for the Space Force, because I know that that's top-of-the-mind stuff for you. So maybe get one more blog in, and then you can head off to the stars.
Okay, that's right. If you could just call me Captain Ashford for now on, I'd appreciate that.
You got it for next week, Bruce. Thanks. Signing off with you. Okay. We're 26 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break for Breakpoint and the news and then come back for the second half of the show. If 29 minutes before the top of the hour. Great to have Bruce with us to sort through the immigration. And Matt, I don't know if you know, but one of the birthdays for today is Baseball Hall of Famer Lou Gehrig, the Iron Horse.
Oh, yes.
And I was, you know, Logan's out of the studio this week, and I was texting him last night saying, you're doing such a good job in the studio that he's in danger of being Wally Pipp. We may never see Logan again. So happy birthday, Lou Gehrig. Let's take a break for more news here. We have Bill and Pam Farrell talking about relationships and marriage. And on this one, the subject is what men really want. I'll be listening to this one with bated breath.
There are two things that every man deeply in his soul hopes that his wife just accepts these two things and embraces these two things. The first one is we just really hope that our wife embraces the strength of our ego, that we really do want a woman in our life who just thinks we are incredible. And who is willing to say, I want you, I want to be around you, I love hearing you talk, I love watching you do whatever you do, because you are just incredible. And the second thing is we hope they embrace a love for the frequency of sexual interaction. And we don't mean to be so kind of irrational about it, but our body kind of screams out for us to be intimate with our wives on a regular basis, and we just long for our wife to say, you know what, I'm going to value that also. Even though it's not naturally how I approach this, I'm going to value that. Because we feel like those are the two areas of our life that are really embarrassing for us, so they're hard to admit to. And if we can say to our wives, hey, when we don't have sex often enough, I just get weird. And I hate it that I get weird, but I just get weird. And when I don't think anybody's proud of me, I entertain doing dumb things. And if I can say that to you and you embrace it, I just long to be with you. But if I can't share those two things with you, I get frustrated. And men will do one of two things there. Either a man will do business with God and say, I'm going to serve my wife, I'm going to serve my family regardless of whether my needs get met. Or he will be mad at them all the time and he will be demanding of his wife. He's going to do one of the two.
You don't need to think about that one, maybe overly simplistic at parts, but worth the conversation between men and women. If you want to catch the entire segment of this, head to myfaithradio.com, a search for Keeping Romance in Your Marriage. You can listen to the entire conversation. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with Janie B. Cheney, children's author and educator, and talking about the fact that our body is actually good and what that means for helping our young people as they grow up.
How much TV do you watch as a family? Do you have movie nights with your kids? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I know it's not always easy to agree on good movies with your teenager, but make an effort to watch things with them, not for your own entertainment, but to give you a front row seat to hear what their world is like. And you can talk about the movie as the credit rolls. Kick around the moral issues featured in the film. Lob open-ended questions about whether or not your kids would act, choose, or say the same things as the main character. Here's an opportunity for you, Mom and Dad, to connect with your teen, spend time together, and help your child become morally discerning and media literate.
There's much more encouragement for parents from Mark Gregston online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
It is 20 minutes before the top of the hour, and this is Faith Radio Mornings. I am your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are now joined on the line by author and educator Janie B. Cheney. We'll switch up the conversation away from immigration just a bit and talk about our kids and education process and sort of where we are. Thank you for joining us this morning, Janie Cheney.
Thank you, Peter.
So your background is a bit about writing a series of books of historical fiction. Do I have that right in terms of putting our kids' minds in some of these past events of history and telling a story around that?
Yes, that's true. These books were written mostly for middle school and early teens.
And for those books, what would you hope that you're immersing our kids into? What do you hope that they're gaining by reading through some of these books?
Well, I describe these books as not Christian fiction per se, but written from a Christian worldview. And I think we lose touch with the past. We try to project our own opinions and worldviews on the past. And part of what I try to do is present the past honestly and kind of show kids how thought patterns have developed over the years.
Mm. Can you give us an example from just one of your books about the kind of scene you're inviting the middle school readers to enter into?
Okay. My very first novel for children is called The Playmaker. And it was published in 2000, and it's takes place in Elizabethan England on the stage. And, of course, during that time, theater was thriving, and there's a very famous playwright at the time whose name was William Shakespeare. And my main character joins the company that Shakespeare writes plays for. In one scene in particular, I recall he's trying to figure out how to balance his life on the stage with life in the real world, and his landlady sort of questions him about that and says, you know that you have a real life to live. You have a personality that was given to you by God, and you need to learn who that is and not play parts in real life. And that's just a small example of how I present a Christian worldview in a what would be considered a secular novel.
Mm. So important. And for our kids to be reading, I mean, you've been in education for quite some time. And can you just speak to the value of reading at a very, very early age? I mean, would you suggest even parents reading to their infants, even prior to official language development, just starting that process? What role does reading have in the development of our kids all throughout growing up?
Oh, my goodness, that's huge. kids need to learn how to think, and I believe that language is God's gift to us. It's our way that we communicate with Him and the way that we learn to process our own thoughts. And hearing words put together in meaningful patterns is how even infants begin to learn to communicate. So, and there's really no substitute for reading to a child. So we started reading to our children when they were 3 months old, and all the way up until they were teenagers. I have a website.
Yeah, please tell us where we can go to see more about this.
Okay. I have a website that I write with a number of colleagues. There are five of us all together, and we contribute to a website called redeemedreader.com. And a lot of it is reviewing books that we think will be beneficial for children to read, but we also have a lot of how-to, and we highly recommend reading aloud even to teenagers. I was just working on an article called How to Read Aloud to Your Teens. And we all advocate that. But reading is a form of learning to process language, learning to recognize other people's ideas, and also beginning to shape your own ideas. We don't do that independently. We have to do it by imitation. Mm. And our ultimate imitation is God Himself, of course.
Yeah, it's well said. I find it interesting when we just pause, and we've got five kids at home, and if we actually just pause before bedtime and read, it's amazing just how bedtimes go and the differences. And so last night with my 12-year-old Samuel, we were reading a bit out of The Two Towers and Lord of the Rings. And, of course, my younger kids than him, 10 and 8-year-old, are dying to get into The Hobbit. And it's amazing how kids just settle in when you just sit and read together like that. It's a little bit of a lost art in our ongoing technologically based society, right? I mean, can you just, again, speak to the importance of modeling that?
Well, part of modeling that is to let your kids see you with a book, not a device necessarily, but a book in your hands and turning the pages and seeing your eyes move and seeing you process thoughts for yourself. That's part of modeling. But the reading aloud is hugely important. It's not just intellectual. It's emotional. It's bonding. Bonding over words and, bonding over a story is very similar to bonding over a Bible story. Mm-hmm. My mother used to always read to us from the Bible before bedtime, and she just read straight through, no cuts.
Yep.
We had questions. She was there to answer them. But I like your example of settling us down. It does do that, and it's just fascinating how God ordains words and language to do that.
Speaking with Janie B. Chaney, who is a children's author, educator, and develops a lot of materials for our people in school. When we'll take a short break, and when we come back, I would love for you to comment on the difference between reading from devices and reading an actual paper or book. This is Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in just a moment. It's 11 minutes before the top of the hour, and we are speaking with author Janie B. Chaney, talking about educating our children, sort of the shape of reading these days. And you made a comment, Janie, before the break around the idea of just turning pages and modeling that, and that might be different than the Kindle situation that we're in typically now and downloading books on a device. What do you find as an educator and an author is the importance of an actual archaic sort of paper copy of a book? Is there importance in reading that versus on a device?
Well, I make a distinction on a device. I make a distinction between reading from a Kindle, such as a Paperwhite. It's very similar to a book, especially if you're reading out loud. Picture books are different. You just don't get the same sense of space and form on a reading device with a picture book. So I do recommend hard copies for that. But I make a big distinction between books or e-books and book apps. And book apps were very popular. They were the coming thing just a few years ago. They've kind of faded out now because I think people realize they just don't take the place of reading from particularly a picture book. Book apps are interactive. They allow the kids to touch pictures and things will happen. You know, little things will pop out and sounds will be played. That's not reading. That is manipulation. And as soon as you introduce gimmicks like that, then the words become secondary. And the little quirks, the little things you can do become primary, and the whole purpose for reading aloud kind of fades into the background. So I make a distinction between e-books just read from a Kindle, especially read aloud, and picture books read from an app. And I don't consider that reading.
Mm. Talking with Janie B. Chaney, author, and you know, one of the conversations we've been having this week is a bit about the growing epidemic of depression and anxiety among our young people. And you recently wrote an article here on the 12th of June that was titled Beloved Dust, and it was subtitled Man Has a Long History of Hating the Human Body, but God called it good. And with young people today, is there even a sense, as you know, they're trying to figure themselves out, and with the depression and the anxiety, that there is even a sense that their body might be good, or do they sort of almost begin to hate themselves at fairly early ages?
Well, it's tough being a teen.
It is.
Your body is changing, and especially early teens. Their attention, their focus shifts from their family and to their peers. And this is true even of homeschool kids. I homeschooled my kids, and I noticed this when I was teaching homeschool classes. all of a sudden they're not listening to me, they're listening to each other. And part of that is they're kind of taking their measure from each other. In a classroom, it's bad enough, but with social media and kids continually posting pictures on Instagram of themselves, especially, and kind of trolling for response, trolling for compliments, oh, you're so beautiful, it's gorgeous, pretty. If you don't get that and your friends are getting that, it just heightens the whole insecurity that you feel about your body to begin with. So social media just exacerbates a problem that's always been there.
Hmm. And do you recommend, I mean, because I do hear those stories, and as you said, it's this sort of ongoing hit of approval or disapproval, and it's happening all day long. I remember back in school, prior to technology, it was hard enough if you just got a single comment in a day that maybe was less than favorable about your appearance or how you looked. But now that's magnified by thousands sometimes during the day. Do you recommend for young people and for parents, as hard as it might be, to keep them off of social media until a certain age or if at all?
Oh, well, I would certainly try to limit it. In a public school situation or in a group situation, kids can come to think that they almost have to have Instagram or some other Snapchat or whatever they're using now, because otherwise they don't belong, and there's such a feeling of alienation if you're not connected in this way. So I'm not sure how I would do that. I would just keep continually, as a parent, I would just keep continually reinforcing my children, especially dads with young women. Dads can have such a huge influence in how their daughters think of themselves and how they look. And just a dad complimenting a daughter on how she looks, or I really like that dress, that color's great on you, without overdoing it, I think that can go a long way to reinforcing a young woman's idea of her body.
Hmm. And in terms of, you know, being present as a parent and reading like that, I mean, there's so many voices in our culture giving us messages all day long and, you know, about who we are. And so as you're talking about a dad and having comments for their daughter, and but you have to have an ongoing voice in their life. It can't just be this random thing that happens throughout the day. So maybe even just sitting down and reading for 20-30 minutes with them each day gives you that voice. Then later, when the compliments come, it has a little bit more meaning.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You need to build this relationship. Going back to reading aloud, one good reason to do that, especially as a family, is it really it builds memories. And as you were saying, it builds a context for kids to feel like they are valued members of the family. They are sharing experiences together. They're talking about things. They're building the conversation that will carry them through their entire lives as long as their parents are living. And all of that just tends to go to support a young person's notion of themselves as a valuable being. And if they think better of themselves, I think they'll tend to think better of their physical selves as well.
Mm. Dr. Janie B. Cheney, thanks for joining us this morning, kind of talking through some of these conversations with our kids. Where can we see your work? Just give us a quick snapshot of your website where we can see what you're doing.
Well, as I mentioned, redeemedreader.com is my website specifically for literary issues, reading solitary, reading aloud, book recommendations and things like that. I have a personal blog, JanieBCheney.com. It's easy to remember as long as you can spell my name. And I also write for World Magazine. I have a regular column, and WNG.org is the place to find those.
Thanks for joining us this morning. You've got a couple minutes before the top of the hour. Take a short break and wrap things up.
Keep making diamonds out of dust.
2 minutes before the top of the hour. Great show today, having Janie B. Cheney talk about literature, of course, the immigration conversation, a bit from Dr. Rosemary Stein as well, in helping our young people. And then the thread of the morning, Paul, was around the creation of the Space Force and the possibilities. Maybe it's not too late for us to get into space after all.
Well, maybe not, but you keep bringing up this whole thing about the red jumpsuit.
Yes.
Well, okay. I've watched enough Star Trek to know red suit bad.
Really? Is that?
If you have a crew member wearing red, their life expectancy drops off precipitously.
So I think we're going to decide for this morning anyway that I am not qualified to head into outer space just yet. I'll do some tutorials. I'm sure they're on YouTube this afternoon, and maybe we can revisit this in the morning. Thanks there for listening, everybody. We'll look forward to chatting with you tomorrow. Have a great day.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.